You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast on multi-cancer early detection, or MCED, hosted by Med Learning Group. This podcast is one in a series of five geared towards several subspecialty practices. In this podcast, Dr. Charu Agarwal will discuss the implications of MCED testing within pulmonology practice. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Agarwal, who's joining us today. Dr. Agarwal is an associate professor of lung cancer excellence, director of the Precision Oncology Innovation Program, and physician leader of airway malignancies research at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Agarwal has researched and spoken at length about blood-based cancer screening and has been involved with these methods for several years at this point.
Thank you, Chris. Happy to be here today.
So let's begin with a little bit of background in this area. Just talk about the scope of the problem here. What is blood-based cancer screening and why do we need it in clinical practice?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. And I think it's important to start with some baseline demographics and why sort of defining the problem. Cancer is the second most common cause of death in the United States following heart disease. About 2 million new cancer cases are expected in the United States in 2023. About 40% of the U.S. population at some point in time will develop cancer in their lifetime. And we know that once you have cancer, five-year survival is not as expected. Today, we can expect a five-year overall survival of about 70% with today's treatments, including immunotherapy and targeted therapy, vastly improved from what it was in the 1960s, where five-year survivals were only in the 20 to 30% range. But regardless, given these staggering statistics that 40% of the population will develop cancer at some point in their lifetime, I think it's important for us to think about screening and could we really turn cancer into a preventable illness? There's a lot of cancers that we can actually screen. And some of these cancers have guidelines for screening, such as breast, colon, prostate. We have very good guidelines for cervical cancer. We also now have guidelines for lung cancer. Before I dive deep into the guidelines, you know, it's important to mention that even though we have these guidelines, many people don't receive screening. And there's a lot of barriers to screening, which could be, these tests are often inconvenient. There's a lack of awareness for these tests. There may be potentially fear of radiation exposure. This involves taking time off from work. You have to go to a radiology facility usually. And then your medical team has to be involved. Patients have to be quite connected to actually aggressively undergo these screenings. Just to give you a few recommendations, we have lung cancer screening in adults over the age of 50 now with a history of smoking with annual low-dose computed or low-dose CT scans. This is approved by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. This is different from colon cancer, where now colonoscopies are recommended at the age of 45. Cervical cancer screening starts at the age of 21. Breast cancer screening, usually we recommend mammograms to begin at the age of 40, although guidelines may begin at 50. And then finally, for prostate cancer, this actually may be slightly easier because it involves a blood test called the prostate-specific antigen, which is usually done by the primary medical doctors. So there are various approaches in terms of screening for one particular cancer. For example, you can use a low-dose CAT scan, which is only geared towards detecting an individual's risk for lung cancer. However, there actually may be a benefit to using a multi-cancer screening, for example, using one test to detect multiple cancers at the same time. For example, a test that can look at multiple solid tumors and potentially I said beforehand that, you know, prostate cancer screening is relatively easy because it's a blood test. And, you know, when we think of these multi-cancer screenings, potentially using a blood test to screen for multiple solid tumors may be a significant advantage.
So, Dr. Agarwal, what kind of information do MCED tests actually provide?
So MCEDs can provide information on both cancer type as well as tumor of origin.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the clinical data of some of these tests. So what are some of the specific results from studies such as Pathfinder and DETECT-A that have clarified the percentage of patients with a positive cancer signal? And more specifically, what's the rate of confirmed cancer in these patients upon further evaluation, and how long does this resolution take?
Sure. So the Pathfinder study is a large study of over 6,000 participants using the Galleri assay. Results were published and presented last year at the ESMO meeting. The primary objective of this result or this trial was to really look at time to achieve diagnostic resolution. That is, if there was a positive signal, how long did it take to achieve diagnostic resolution? And they found that it was achieved within 3 months for majority of the patients, for about 73% of the patients. There was also a secondary objective to really look at how well this test performed. And we've talked a little bit about sensitivity and specificity, Chris. And basically what we found was that the cancer signal was detected in about 1.4% of the patients, but it was highly specific with 99.1% specificity offered with this test. Now, this is not the only test out there. There's also a multi-biomarker approach. This is different test and different study design compared to Pathfinder. This was also presented at ESMO in 2022. This is a retrospective case control study that included cancers from 15 organ sites total, some of which that have no recommended screening options. So it's actually very interesting that you know, including cancers where this may fill an immediate void. Sensitivity using this test overall across all stages was 61%. Again, found high specificity with about 98%. Now, this multi-biomarker approach is different from the Pathfinder approach in that it uses, as the name implies, multiple components such as aneuploidy, looks at protein signatures, it definitely looks at methylation as well, and then finally combines some mutational signatures as well. And finally, we have a third study, the Thunder case control study, using this OverSea test, which is basically a breakthrough device designation by the FDA in 2023. Very similar results, high specificity of about 99% and sensitivity in the order of about 60 to 70% on this study coming in at 69%. Again, early detection of most solid tumors, mainly including esophageal, liver, lung, ovarian, and pancreatic cancers. Large study, over 10,000 subjects enrolled. So I think there's a lot of data emerging in terms of MCED using a variety of different tests.
When you're explaining the results of an MCED test to a patient, how do you describe to them the difference between a cancer signal on one of these tests and an actual cancer diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this is very important as we start to see more of these tests being used in practice. When I get the results of a test back, it tells me that, yes, there may be a cancer. It may tell me a potential tumor of origin, but a cancer diagnosis can only be established after I've gone through the steps, after I've done the radiographic evaluation. For example, if I get an MCED test telling me that there may be lung cancer, I will still have to go through doing the CAT scan to look at the lungs. I want to go through the biopsy and then establish the diagnosis. So I do talk to the patients that there is a difference between getting the results from an MCED test and then finally making the diagnosis.
So do you have any insight into how specific cancer stages affect the reliability of MCED testing?
As with everything else in cancer, cancer stage can affect our ability to pick up these pick up signals in MCED tests. So for example, as the stage of cancer increases, the reliability of these tests increases. For example, using methylation signatures, we have found in prospective trials that sensitivity of these tests to pick up the cancer increased for later stage cancers. For example, the sensitivity was, for all cancers studied, sensitivity was 43% for stage one and went all the way up to 93% for stage four. And these tests could also pick up, as we discussed earlier, tumor of origin. Now, these tests were done with a variety of solid tumors, and the signal held true for all of these.
So our listeners today are primarily pulmonology clinicians. Let's say we have maybe a female patient in her 60s with COPD, and maybe she's a 15-pack year history of smoking and a family history of lung cancer or something like that. So she'd be a reasonable candidate for early detection cancer screening along these lines. So as her pulmonologist, how do you begin this conversation with her to get her on board with a test?
I think this would be the kind of patient who we would say, at least firstly, you know, we should talk about smoking cessation as well as beginning this conversation about screening. There are some eligible populations for existing tests. For example, patients over the age of 50 are at an elevated cancer risk. So you said this woman was 60 years old. I think we'll talk to her, obviously, about getting mammograms. We'll talk to her about visiting her OBGYN for regular exams, as well as cervical cancer screening, a colonoscopy. And then I think we have to really factor in the number of pack years before we can recommend a low-dose CAT scan to be eligible for clearance by the insurance for coverage. However, having said that, I think these are the kinds of individuals that we need to have these conversations with regarding both smoking cessation as well as risk of cancer.
So let's continue the discussion of this patient. So let's say the test is administered and it comes back positive for, say, lung cancer. What would you tell her at this point, and what would be your next steps?
That's a really good question. And I think we are beginning to see these scenarios in our clinic as these tests are being used. We would firstly start off by evaluating the test results itself. We would evaluate for the potential for false positive or false negative results. We have to remember that these test results can have a significant psychological impact on the patients. We would probably then go on with more intensive screening for this positive signal. In a patient with COPD and a patient with history of smoking, if the test is positive for a signal for lung cancer, we would potentially proceed with a CAT scan to evaluate for a nodule, a mass, mediastinal lymphadenopathy, etc.
So when there's a positive signal on one of these screening tests, there's definitely a delay in the time that it takes to confirm an actual diagnosis or determine that it's a false positive. And this can be a difficult time for patients. What strategies do you use to handle patient anxiety specifically during this time that it takes to confirm the diagnosis?
I think there has to be a lot of communication, a lot of patient education as we order these tests, interpret these tests, and take the next steps, so to speak. So when I am faced with a patient who was handed a positive signal by an MCED, I make sure that I schedule a consultation, a face-to-face visit, and I really talk to them about what steps we are going to take and ensure that results are communicated in a very meaningful fashion to them as they're going through the process. This can be an extremely anxiety-provoking test, and I think we should just spend a lot of time communicating as well as ensuring that that subsequent tests are done in a timely fashion.
So as this is a screening test, there's the need for follow-up diagnostic confirmational testing. Let's say maybe the patient who received a positive test result is resistant to further testing. Discuss why this might be. Like, what are some of the psychological or access-related barriers to confirmational diagnostic testing?
Absolutely. And we see this in clinic. You know, it's a huge impact when you receive such a test. There can be psychological barriers to completing the confirmatory test, or there can be barriers to access. For example, patients may be in shock. Maybe they don't believe the results. They can say they're completely asymptomatic. There also may be lack of knowledge. They probably don't know or understand the next steps. There's a fair bit of denial as well as fear. They can also have some therapeutic nihilism where they don't believe traditional treatments would be safe, or they just may not be aware of the gravity of the situation. At the same time, I think we discussed this a little bit earlier, that there may be serious access barriers. You know, patients may not be able to take time off from work. There may be cost involved. Insurance may or may not cover these tests. Medical centers may be far away. And, you know, several different social barriers may prevent patients from going to the next step to confirm or confirm cancer.
Well, that sounds really tricky. You've got to get buy-in kind of at several steps along the way to make it happen. But let's finish with a few concluding remarks. So in your opinion, where are we going with this type of testing? And they're starting to be used in clinics across the country. So what's kind of the end goal of implementing this type of testing?
I think it's cancer is a significant health problem. We talked about this earlier. About 40% of the individuals in the U.S. will at some point in time develop cancer. Today, less than 20% of the patients or cancers, I should say, are detected by screening. But really, I think the vision in the future is that we'll be able to detect more cancers at an early stage so that we can increase our chances of cure. Early detection is key in cancer, since this can totally affect quality of life, as well as our ability to perform resections, as well as increase our chances of survival. Currently, evidence-based modalities for cancer screening remain limited, and they have very low adherence. However, a blood-based approach may actually be really attractive. We are already using ctDNA-based assays to personalize therapies in diseases such as lung cancer and breast cancer. So there is growing awareness amongst oncologists as well as pulmonologists and primary care doctors on the use of ctDNA. And I think this is a really promising approach for the future, because it takes you away from single test, single cancer screening to one test, multiple cancer screening. I think in the future, we'll just have to become more aware and knowledgeable on how to interpret these tests and how to apply these routinely in the care of our patients, especially in a primary care clinic.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Agarwal. This has been an excellent and extremely important discussion on the background of multi-cancer early detection testing and how it's actually getting off the ground as a practical use for identifying cancer earlier. But that's it for today. Once again, thank you, Dr. Agarwal, for joining us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining as well. As a reminder, MedLearning Group offers many types of CME programs across a variety of disease states, including several pulmonology topics. I invite you to explore these on our website, www.medlearninggroup.com. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you as well to our grant supporter, Grail, who provided unrestricted grants for this educational activity. Thanks very much and have a great day.